ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Tom Linney.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest thing you can do for the earth.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about your health, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on Saturday, April 6th, is a great event in Austin, Texas. And with us today on ACT is Adrian Lusk, who's the coordinator of the Texas Veg Fest. Adrian, hello, and thanks for being on the show.
Oh, hi, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Sure. I attended last year. Is this the second year of this festival?
Yes, sir, it actually is, our second year.
Tell our listeners what to expect if they make it to Austin on Saturday, April 6th.
Well, we have a fantastic event plan for this year. We've got some very amazing and dynamic speakers who are coming from all across the nation. We're very excited to have them there. They're very dynamic. They're very versatile. They've got a lot of very valuable information that they can provide, some fantastic demos with some fantastic food that they are going to be demonstrating as well, which we're very excited about. We've got six bands that are all around this area. Of course, no festival in Austin would be complete without its live music. So we definitely want to keep the festive background, and so we wanted to kind of encompass that Austin feel. So we've got music, we've got youth activities, we've got speakers, we've got about 92 companies that are coming and being a part of this event here.
What I enjoyed most last year was the number of booths. So many different products were available for free samples of food, and I wound up buying a Vitamix because they were selling them there at the festival, and it's really a great festival. So, Adrian, where can people go on the web to find out more about the Texas Veg Fest?
We do have our website up, and it's every day we keep adding more information on it. So if you don't see something today, keep looking tomorrow. You'll get the information. It's www.texasvegfest.com. It's got all of our information about the admission, there being no fee, where the donations go, our band schedules, our speakers, our vendors, our volunteer information. If you're traveling outside of Austin, it shows where everybody's staying at, places you can go eat at. There is a pre-party on Friday the 5th at Cheer Up Charlie's, and then we have a whole bunch of other activities kind of encompassing the Veg Fest itself. So if you're coming out of town, it's kind of even better because there's so much. It's not just the festival itself. There's a pre-party, and then there's other things that are going on during the weekend with Texas Veg Fest, not just the festival itself. So we try to make it an all-encompassing kind of weekend experience. So it's traveling. We've got a travel tab. Check it out, and it'll give all the information, any type of questions that you may have about timing, schedule, et cetera. It's on the website. You can always question us and send us an email at info@texasvegfest.com.
Thanks, and I hope you have a great time at the festival and that it's successful as it possibly can be.
Well, we appreciate the support. We really do.
Thanks again.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Carl Urzakowski. He's the director and producer of Maximum Tolerated Dose. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
All U.S. meat inspectors will be furloughed on the same days as the Federal Meat Safety Agency shaves its budget by $53 million under automatic spending cuts, Agriculture Undersecretary Elizabeth Hagen said last week. Hagen told the House Appropriations Subcommittee the furloughs, which are expected to total 11 days in all, with none in succession, were likely to begin in mid-July. She said a nationwide furlough on the same day would treat all regions of the country equally. Her testimony put a sharper focus on the Agriculture Department's plans for carrying out the furloughs. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told lawmakers last week that the furlough days would not be consecutive to minimize disruption to the meat industry. Meat plants are not allowed to operate without USDA inspection. There could be spotty meat shortages from a slowed-down production system in the summer and early fall. All 9,212 meat safety workers will be furloughed at the same time, including 8,000 frontline workers, which includes inspectors, lab workers, and investigators. Now's a good time to try some of the many meat alternatives available at Sprouts, Cielo Vista Natural Market, and even Albertsons carries several brands of veggie burgers.
Gray 2K USA released a new report on dog racing in Texas. With a $10,000 grant from the ASPCA, they assembled and analyzed public sources of information, including hundreds of news reports, state documents, and industry statements about dog racing. It's their hope that this new information will inform the debate and help end the cruelty of dog racing in the Lone Star State. According to records obtained from the Texas Racing Commission, hundreds of greyhounds endure lives of confinement at Gulf Greyhound Park. Racing dogs are fed diseased 4D meat to reduce overhead costs. More than 1,500 greyhound racing injuries were reported between January of 2008 and December 2011, and 56 of those injuries resulted in death. The total amount of gambling on live racing in Texas declined by 61% in the last 5 years. And a trainer surrendered his license after he was caught on video using live rabbits as bait for greyhounds. There were once three facilities for dog racing in Texas, but now there's just one fully operational dog track in the state. A Gray 2K representative said that the question is not if, but when dog racing will end here and worldwide. You can support their efforts to be a voice for the dogs today by visiting gray2kusa.org.
Stay with us. Coming up next on ACT Radio, a conversation with Carl Orzechowski, director of the film Maximum Tolerated Dose. That's next on ACT Radio.
Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Carl Orzechowski. He's the director of Maximum Tolerated Dose. Thanks for joining us, Carl.
Thank you very much for having me.
Carl, if we could start off by asking, how did you originally get involved in animal issues?
Somewhat of a long story that I'll try and do my best to encapsulate in a few short sentences. But basically, I really got introduced to animal issues through radical punk rock bands when I was in high school. Although at the time it didn't really sink in for me, I was very much attracted to their political leanings when it came to other issues, but I always thought that those bands were a bit too extreme for my taste when it came to animal issues. But they were really the ones who planted the seed for me that, you know, the way that we treat non-human animals, something about it is not right. So fast forward to 2005, I had become a vegetarian and thought that was, from my position, that seemed acceptable to me. And around that time, I got involved with the Animal Voices radio show in Toronto, which at the time was hosted by Lauren Gorman. And Lauren taught me a lot about animal ethics. And through working on the radio show, I felt it would be hypocritical to be involved and not be vegan. So I kind of transitioned to a vegan diet, partly because I was learning a lot from Lauren and from the way that she approached the subject through the show, bringing in a lot of different political issues and really taking an intersectional approach, and also just because it felt like kind of a default position to take when being involved in producing something like that. That was really, the Animal Voices show, and meeting Lauren was really how I got involved.
You know, it's an interesting story about music planting the seed. I've heard that story a couple of other times, and I really haven't grown to appreciate how much the music scene has got the message out.
Yeah, it's really something that I feel like I often look at musicians who take up a political issue, you know, especially when they're more popular musicians, and I think It's just kind of the trend of the moment, or they're just taking it up because it's the cause of the moment. And I think that, you know, oftentimes it can be quite shallow, the way that artists do take up political issues. But in my case, some of the bands that I was listening to were really serious about it, and they presented the issues in a very multidimensional way that I don't think I appreciated fully at the time, but over time I've really, you know, looking back, have come to appreciate just how deeply they thought of the issues and how they presented them in such a strong way. I mean, I know so many people who really got into any political issues or into animal rights specifically through music, and that's pretty incredible.
Let's talk for a few minutes about your movie. How did you decide to investigate what goes on in laboratories with animals?
Back in 2010, I had a couple of conversations with people who I didn't realize when I first started talking to them, but through our conversation, it was revealed to me that they had worked in laboratories once upon a time. And the thing that these two people had in common, one was Dr. Jean Tiffin from the PCRM, and another was a woman named Isabel who used to work at a commercial laboratory in Montreal. The thing that they held in common was that they left the practice for ethical reasons. At the time, this really didn't... I mean, I knew that there were likely lots of, you know, doctors and people who were out there who had been involved in animal testing and had stopped at some point, but I really just had never met any firsthand, and so meeting them and hearing their stories directly really had a deep effect on me, and that was really the sort of impetus for making the film.
I liked your approach, and you know, when I was thinking it's going to be about animal experimentation, I thought it's going to be full of stats and, you know, things that are very factual about how that business operates. But in actuality, the film is really a lot about stories about the people who are, you know, behind this industry and how they struggled with their own ethics and what they felt was right and what isn't right. What are some of the stories of the individuals that were involved in this film?
The film is actually intentionally focused on only people who have had firsthand experience in laboratories, even the people who are in the film who don't talk about their laboratory experience directly, they have actually also worked in laboratories. And that was intentional because I really wanted the film to be intimate and personal. I don't come from a science background, and I think it would be really disingenuous of me to claim that I know a whole bunch of things based on statistics and so on and so forth, because that's just not where I come from. So I really wanted to feature people who had firsthand experience. Some of the people that you meet in the film, for example, I mentioned Isabel and Dr. John Pippen, they both have really intense stories about how they, you know, they really wanted to believe in what they were doing. And Dr. Pippen was a lead researcher at a cardiology lab, and he was using dogs in his research while at the same time he had dogs that he lived with at home. Isabel, on the other hand, was sort of lower on the totem pole, so to speak, in terms of the hierarchy of laboratory workers. She was just a simple laboratory technician who was in charge of, you know, looking after the animals, feeding them, checking up on them every day. And she was just doing it because, you know, in her mind she wanted to help animals, she needed a job, and that was something that she had to do. Another person that you meet in the film is Rachel Weiss, and Rachel is, I think, one of the most powerful speakers in the film, because she talks not only about a variety of types of labs that she worked in, but she talks about her experience with Jerome, who is a chimpanzee who is used for AIDS research. And Rachel had experience working with people with AIDS, humans with AIDS, but she ended up working at Yerkes National Primate Research Center in Atlanta, Georgia, with chimpanzees who had been used in AIDS research, and watched as this chimpanzee eventually developed human AIDS through human HIV as opposed to simian immunodeficiency virus. And she watched him essentially, you know, waste away and die, and that had such a powerful effect on her that she decided to leave that work entirely and begin to actually advocate on behalf of primates in laboratories.
I think it's amazing that the folks that tell their stories in this movie are able to transform from this training that they get you know, before they go into this type of work, that it's really essential and that it's for the greater good. And so, for, you know, for us to see that, to see them transform from that perspective to really trying to find a better way to live and realizing that this isn't something that has to be done, I thought was really powerful.
And I think it's an important sort of intervention into the sort of vivisection debate, because I think we tend to get very emotional when it comes to how we approach people who do this kind of work, and we tend to, you know, we tend to think of them in pretty one-dimensional ways. And I think it's important to recognize that, you know, in each person's life story, in my life story or your life story, no one goes to sleep at night thinking, you know, in the morning, I can't wait to be an awful person tomorrow. No one thinks of themselves in that way, and we all tell ourselves stories, depending on what we do, that, you know, we all justify our own actions to ourselves all the time, and people who work in laboratories are no different. And I think that it's important to recognize that, you know, nobody who works in these situations is sort of beyond making an ethical shift. I think it's really just a matter of a sort of perfect storm of circumstances where they end up seeing things differently.
One point you make in the film is that most of the laboratory experiments are carried out with rodents, rats and mice, and that this is somehow more acceptable because we think of them as pests. People don't really realize the number of dogs and cats and monkeys and chimpanzees that are used in research.
You know, generally speaking, the animal experimentation industries have done a really good job of making it seem like, you know, rats and mice are the most often used, and they are. But they've also, the way that that rhetoric has been employed is to sort of indicate that, you know, it's not such a big deal. Like, if the end game is that we're going to cure some disease or create, you know, these new medical advancements or whatever the idea is, that, you know, any amount of mice being killed is acceptable. And I think culturally that is probably a fairly, you know, I feel like that's a fair thing to say. I think people do see rats and mice as very expendable. So I really wanted to disrupt that, and the story of Miss Peepers, who's a rescued laboratory mouse, in the film kind of tries to disrupt that. And I mean, from there, I go into discussing dogs, long-tailed macaques, and chimpanzees, and you can... There's so many other animals that are used in laboratories. It's quite shocking, the sort of the Noah's Ark that you might find if you do some research on what kind of animals are used in labs. No, I don't think any animals are sort of beyond being used. I mean, we use chimpanzees, and they're pretty much as close to humans as you can get.
Yeah. Being vegan, one of the hardest things that we justify to ourselves or to others who ask about it is research with animals, because most people have the idea that diseases are being cured. And so it's awfully hard, you know, to take that vegan stand that we do against animal in labs. But people don't realize that most of the animals experimented on are for testing cosmetics or to fulfill a professor's need to do research for grant money.
Yeah, it's something that is an issue that I think needs to get talked about more, and that, you know, people like Dr. Ray Greek, who's written on the subject quite extensively, have talked about, is this idea that the difference between basic research and applied research. So for the listeners, essentially, you know, basic research is research looking for knowledge for the sake of knowledge, not necessarily doing research for any type of particular application. And then there's applied research, which is, you know, research that has some kind of intended application later on. And one of the problems that Dr. Greek highlights often is that there's a lot of basic research that is, you know, research done for the sake of it, that actually masquerades as applied research. So you'll have research on a particular animal that's done, but they'll include a paragraph in their research abstract that says, you know, we hope that this will eventually contribute to our knowledge about, you know, X, Y, or Z. And I think that it's such a difficult issue because as far as you or I or other people go who don't have a background in science, we're ultimately, whether we take Dr. Ray Greek's position or we take, someone who's pro-animal testing's position, if you don't have a background in science, you're ultimately taking someone else's word for it. And it becomes a very difficult thing to sort of parse as a layperson, but I think that most research institutions, whether they're commercial or publicly funded, do recognize that the three, they call it the three R's, reduction, replacement, and refinement of animal research to either eliminate the use of animals or to replace them or to use less animals in research. They recognize that that's a good thing, and so if they're willing to admit that animal testing should be phased out or that it has ethical problems, then I feel like we already agree on that, and it's just a matter of talking about timelines.
For our listeners, Dr. Ray Greek was a researcher, and his book, Sacred Cows and Golden Geese, is a wonderful book about the fallacies of animal research.
He's also written a great book called Frequently Asked Questions about the Use of Animals in Research for the Scientifically Perplexed. And it's similar to Sacred Cows and Golden Geese, but it's written a bit more accessibly than that book. I've read Sacred Cows and Golden Geese and found it a bit of an uphill hike, but his other book is a bit more accessible.
Carl, it seems like, this is an industry that is driven by, this mantra that this is really in the greater good, right, and it's essential for moving us forward. And so you would think with that sort of ethos that it would be, transparency would be key. They wouldn't be afraid to show that, this is what we're doing because this is what's great for mankind. But, in your film, you show these facilities and they're like prisons, and you drive by them and you'd have no idea, the kinds of things that are going on in these places.
And I think that it's, as I talk about in the film as well, it's interesting to note that historically it wasn't always this way. There was a time when animal experimentation was much more of a sort of public and a visible practice, and it's really over time as people's sensitivities towards animals have changed that, scientific research has gone increasingly behind closed doors and brick walls and blanked out windows. And it's always sort of framed in terms of, if people saw, they don't really understand what's going on, so they can't understand the research just by looking at a photo or by looking at, a video or something like that. But what people can understand from photos or videos is the kind of distress and suffering that animals are going through in those situations. And it's an industry that's notoriously secretive and that really hides behind a kind of father knows best mentality where it's, you may not understand what's going on, but we do. It becomes extremely difficult to fight against that on any sort of, with any sort of logic.
And one of the, the great things I think about this film and bringing awareness to the issue is also it seems that you all are trying to provide a resource to, former lab workers and doctors and other folks that were in this field and they're trying to find a way out and trying to find a way to deal with it. How can, these folks get the help that they might need?
Well, I think it's important to note, too, that in providing these kind of outlets and resources, we're not interested in being anti-science. I actually, I'm fascinated by science, and I think that the world is full of a lot of really significant problems that we need scientific research to help. But I think in terms of, lab workers and researchers, when it comes to the use of animals in laboratories, it's a really ingrained practice. It's very difficult to speak honestly about it in the laboratory setting, in different institutional settings. It's very taboo to speak out against it. And what we wanted to do is provide researchers and lab workers, whether they're still involved or whether they've already left, with some kind of outlet where they could share their stories. So some of the people who are in the film have offered to volunteer should we get anyone stepping forward to help in sort of peer counseling them with what they're going through. And, it's unfortunate to me that kind of support isn't really provided. I think as far as the animal rights movement goes, recognize that that slaughterhouse work is incredibly difficult, and you know, I think in some cases we might take pity on slaughterhouse workers in a certain way, but I think people who work in laboratories, they endure trauma, and especially if they're having ethical crises about it, I think offering an olive branch and a helping hand at the same time is really powerful. I'm really hoping that it contributes to a culture shift. I don't see animal testing changing because of people holding signs outside of lab.
Yeah.
I really do see it changing from within, and I really hope that we can be at least a drop in the ocean of that culture shift.
Can you tell our listeners the website where they can go to learn more about the movie?
Sure. So if people go to MaximumToleratedDose.org, or if they, you know, just Google Maximum Tolerated Dose film, they'll find the website. And on the website, we have a whole bunch of resources for people. We have a reading list that includes, you know, both pro-animal testing resources and anti-animal testing resources, because both are, you know, really important to understanding the debate. We have, you know, trailers for the film that you can watch. We have links to different interviews that we've done, and eventually a full list of references from the film and a bunch of other stuff to be able to download. The film should be out in late May or early June on DVD, and the DVD will have some extra stuff that you can watch, and it also has the website also has our contact information, where if you are a current or former lab worker, you can reach out to us, and even if you are a current lab worker, it's counseling that we provide without judgment, and we look forward to hearing from people.
We've been talking with Carl Orzechowski, the director and producer of Maximum Tolerated Dose. Thanks so much for being with us, Carl.
Thank you so much for having me.
In case you missed it at the beginning of the show, we mentioned a great event coming to Austin on Saturday, April the 6th, the Texas Veg Fest. You can learn more about this great festival by going to texasvegfest.com.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them at ktep.org.
And to learn more about a plant-based diet, please go to the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org. Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Tom Lenny. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.